Yes.
Welcome, friends and folks at home. We'll call the House Committee on Higher Education to order for today. Today is Thursday, February 23rd. This will likely be the last committee gathering that we will have during this February session. And the topic we have today is an informational hearing on Senate Bill 1538. And we have a couple of panels. Looks like about three people per, so we'll start off if they're ready for us. Tim Nesbitt and Bridget Burns and Andrea Henderson.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee. I'm Tim Nesbitt, manager of the Governor's Oregon Education Investment Project, and if it pleases the chair, I would rather start to my right with Ms. Burns or Ms. Henderson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Andrea Henderson, Oregon Community College Association, and what I thought I would do today is talk a little bit about Senate Bill 1538, particularly as it pertains to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, to talk about what was done last session, how this changes it, and what our hope is for the future around the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. And then Bridget Burns will talk about it from the university perspective, but there's also some other elements in the bill that are important to the universities that she'll cover as well. So as you know, Senate Bill 242 last session created the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, and our work since last session has been to talk about what is the role of the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, how does it align with the Oregon Education Investment Board, and are there further clarifications around that role that need to be considered. And what you have in front of you with Senate Bill 1538 is what we hope is further clarification of how that all is going to fit together. So the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, as it's envisioned, is a place that will convene the conversations around the intersections between both community colleges and the university system. Our students go to both. We have a lot of issues in common. There's also a lot that's different between community colleges and the university system. We have very different governance structures and different types of boards that oversee us, with the community colleges having the local boards and the State Board of Education as a coordinating board, and then the universities with the State Board of Higher Education. So essentially, HEC is a place that will convene the conversations about important issues that impact both of us in a way that can help continue to move the conversation forward on those important policy pieces that need to be considered. In some ways, it can be looked at as kind of the next step from what has been called the joint boards. For several years, we've had the joint boards of education, when the Board of Education and the Board of Higher Education met together to talk about issues such as transfer articulation and other issues of common interest that impact our students. In a sense, this is really the next step to formalize that in a commission that can really focus on what the needs of students are. And in the draft that you have in front of you is essentially our attempt to further codify what the role of the HEC should be. Specifically, language is added to the statutory authority of HEC to line out.
HEC is
Higher Education Coordinating.
HECC.
Mm-hmm. HECC, correct.
My apologies, yes, Higher Education Coordinating Commission.
HEC's fine.
That specifically, the commission will look at specific student issues, how students transfer both between community colleges and between community colleges and the university system, articulation issues of those students, access for students to post-secondary education, how our underserved populations, how their needs are met. Dual credit with the high schools. But the variety of issues that directly impact those students' needs, what the Higher Education Coordinating Commission really creates is a place to convene that conversation and to ensure that as we look at policy issues, there is a place that's really focused on the experiences of the student. So that's what we've attempted to create here. As we've looked at creating the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, what we do want to recognize is there's a lot of tremendous work that has been done, that's done because it's, from the joint board's perspective, it contains stakeholders that are working at the local level. And so what we've tried to do in creating the authority of the HEC, Higher Education Coordinating Commission, is to hopefully stay in that same spirit where the Higher Education Coordinating Commission can act as a convener, can bring best practices from the local level, but not become directive to tell institutions specifically how to do it, but instead create a place where draft policies can be created to help align us, continue to align community colleges and the universities around those areas. So hopefully that's what we've created here. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Bridget Burns to speak further on it.
Could I ask one question before you go on? All of you are aware of the most recent amendments to the bill, is that correct? Because I saw some dash 10s that showed up today. So your testimony will all reflect the most recent stuff that's floating around out there, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Thanks.
Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, for the record, Bridget Burns, Chief of Staff for the Oregon University System. I'm going to just talk to you very high level about what's contained within the legislation, and I'm going to particularly talk about the Dash 10 amendments, which I really, really need. And then I'm going to talk to you about where this is coming from in terms of the timeline post-242, why this is in front of you today. And Andrea talked to you a lot about the HEC, and so I think that we'll probably have an opportunity afterward to dissect the differences between governance, coordination, and budgeting, which I think the questions that seem to be out there in people's minds are, you know, what the heck is the heck? And why do we need it compared to the State Board of Higher Ed or the OEIB? What are the functional differences in the day-to-day life of someone who's an educator? And so I can perhaps talk to you about that from the OUS perspective, and Andrea can touch on it from the community college perspective. So within Senate Bill 1538, what you have is mainly a clarification about the achievement compacts, that they will, their primary reporting relationship is to the OEIB and not to the HEC. The Coordinating Commission is more of a convener, as Andrea indicated, and therefore it seems a bit inappropriate to have it have budgetary authority or to be prescribing any activities for the campuses, regardless of where they're at. So it made more sense that the OEIB should be the ones who hold the achievement compact. The reason that you're seeing it now is that, as you'll recall, Senate Bill 242 and Senate Bill 909 passed out at the same time. Since then, there have been a lot of really meaningful conversations, broad-based conversations, where we've gotten a better idea of what achievement compacts are, where they should be, what they're like. And as that conversation has gone on, it makes more sense that the HEC really should maybe advise a little bit about that, but it primarily shouldn't have a role in determining those. Additionally, there is an amendment in Senate Bill 1538 that we needed in Senate Bill 242. It's a minor treasurer's technical amendment, but something that we committed last year to put in, and it didn't get in to the original bill. All it does is make it that if the treasurer wants to pass or make a change to law, they don't have to call out specifically the Oregon University System. In all other cases, we're no longer a state agency. However, in this case, it allows us to be referred to as such. It just makes their job a little bit easier, and we agreed back then. Additionally, this legislation transfers the career schools to the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission. This was something that was previously anticipated, and I believe you have folks from ODE who can talk to you a little bit more about this later. But finally, it also transfers the data system piece. We've all been talking about thinking differently about data. It transfers that authority to the OEIB on the post-secondary end rather than keeping it at the HEC. So that's what's in the bill, and then the Dash 10 amendments are... it was merely, I think, an oversight earlier that we had an earlier amendment that would give us a one-year lag for the career schools transfer to the HEC, because as we all know, July 1, the HEC is supposed to come on board, but it doesn't have, you know, staff or anything like that right now. So it makes sense to give them a one-year lag that transfer take place so that we have the appropriate staffing and support. Additionally, there was also just a minor issue with a budget clarification piece that happened in an earlier amendment that was unintentional, and so that's comprised within the Dash 10 amendment. So we're hoping that you have that there's a work session and that those are adopted. So in terms of where this is coming from, it's mainly that Senate Bill 242 has been enacted, a majority of it, and this is the next piece. So this is really anticipating the July 1 date when the HEC would be coming on board. Since Senate Bill 242 passed, as you all probably heard me talk about way too much last session, there were a multitude of dates within that piece of legislation. July 1 of last year, where we had expenditure limitation lifted. January 1 of this year, when the university system became no longer a state agency, and where we became no longer under the oversight of the DOJ, and now we have brought on some attorneys to support our campuses. And we've now procured a risk management consultant who is helping us find a risk manager. And on July 1, the HEC and our risk management piece will finally shift over. So the full adoption of Senate Bill 242 will finally be complete on July 1. And so the reason why you're seeing this now is that we've learned more, we've understood more, and we've come up with better ideas of how this entity will function in a world with the OEIB and the State Board of Higher Ed and these ongoing governance conversations. So that's what Senate Bill 15-3 has within it. And as Andrea mentioned, the HEC is going to be more of a convener. It's going to be cultivating a sense of collaboration and incentivizing that, but it's not going to be prescriptive. It's not going to be top-down. It's not going to tell institutions directly what to do. It's going to cultivate and facilitate better relationships between them, regardless of where you sit. One of the key components of the HEC is that it's going to deal with the independent colleges and universities, OHSU, as well as the community colleges and OUS. Right now, the joint boards primarily looks at OUS and the community colleges. So this is kind of expanding the collaboration that we're going to be having, which is really important because, as I like to view it, the HEC is going to hold the 80%, of the 40-40-20, it's going to hold the 40 and the 40 fully. Because right now, OUS, in theory, we're tasked with completing, achieving that piece, that 40% of Oregonians having a four-year degree. But the truth is, we can't do that on our own. A large part of that is also going to be helped out by OHSU and the independent colleges. They're going to contribute quite a bit to that 40%. So in terms of the community colleges as well, the private independent colleges and universities can provide degrees and certificates that might also apply there. And so the HEC will really kind of be a supportive voice for you all that will keep an eye on that entire piece about post-secondary education, be able to report back and be responsive to needs of the Legislative Assembly. Also things that you've brought up recently, textbook affordability, STEM, all these kinds of things that transcend the institutions, it makes sense that there be a space where you can have that conversation and not have to repeat the conversation over and over. So the idea behind the HEC is going to be broad-based. And the difference between the HEC and governance and the OEIB is my final point, which is governance is day-to-day operations. It's keeping the lights on. It's making sure our degrees have value for our students, that we're meeting public safety needs, risk management, fiduciary responsibility. It's the real meat and bones, right? But coordination is something that's kind of more on the peripheral. We know it's there. We want it. But do you always have time for it, necessarily? It's something that we want to cultivate, but it's not necessarily something that always happens. So it's something that we're kind of reaching beyond ourselves. And with the OEIB, they're going to be focusing on transformational change and budgeting and kind of creating a ways and means process for all of the education enterprise. So they are functionally very different. They will bring different things to the table that will enhance our experience as educational institutions. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have, but I'm also happy to hand it over to Tim.
Why don't we go to a quick question? I know Co-Chair Denver has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, not a question, just a comment. First of all, Bridget, as usual, very clear and compelling presentation of the bill. Two other entities that are being invited to the big table, by the way, you know, that's kind of the metaphor that we're thinking of for this HEC, are the workforce investment boards, you know, in the state, because, you know, we want to, you know, we're thinking about post-secondary really in its broadest sense, and we want to you know, it's part of that effort to break down silos. And so, the silos between community colleges and universities and independent colleges and the workforce effort in general. And I would add also the for-profit colleges are also going to be at the table. And there was mention of the career schools, the career colleges, and we want to be able to attack 40-40-20 in a really global sense. And that's hopefully what this bill will allow us to do.
Representative Greenlee.
Yeah. I think your answers were clear and compelling, but I didn't quite understand what you said. So,
from the top.
Your statement about governance being who pays the bills or something, I mean, buying the stamps and licking the envelopes is governance, is it? And so, I mean, and I don't know where governance went in the discussion of a bunch of different boards that have different roles. I mean, somehow this whole thing is very clear to you and others, but I've had a little experience with higher ed over the last 50 years, and I'm having a lot of trouble understanding the difference between the distinction and the difference.
Co-Chair Johnson, Representative Greenlick, I can try to be a little bit clearer. Governance is kind of hard to put your hands around,
I don't think that's in charge. It seems easy to me.
It is.
I mean, if I want to start a new degree program, somebody's going to tell me, yes, I can do it, or no, I can't do it, and that's governance. It's not about paying the bills. I mean, that's administration, which is easy.
I think that governance oversees administration, and so sometimes it's very inextricably linked. And typically, what kind of governance structure you have and who leads can indicate what kinds of outcomes you achieve because they use the administration to achieve it. So I have a hard time separating those out. I'm just trying to clarify that the things that are going to be done by the HEC are really different than what's done by the State Board of Higher Ed or the local community colleges boards.
And the investment council.
And the investment board, yeah. It's going to be functionally different. It's difficult to explain exactly what it's going to be like because I'm trying to kind of predict. But the best thing I can do is point you to the stuff right now that I can point my finger to and I can say that's stuff the joint board does. And that would be things like articulation agreements. When I talk to colleagues around the country, they are shocked that Oregon has an articulation agreement between every community college and every university. And they have common course numbers. That's unheard of in some places, even ones with coordinating commissions, because getting people to come together and when they don't have to and come up with things they could be doing differently just to make it easier for their partners in other sectors, that's a challenge. And here in Oregon, we've been really successful at that. And that's something the joint boards has done. So that's something the HEC will hold. It's things like that where it's following how the student experiences their education regardless of where they're paying their bills and regardless of where they're sitting. So a student will experience multiple governance structures, different presidents of universities, different experiences there, but the HEC will kind of always have their finger on the pulse of how long did it take them to transfer? Was it easy for them to get their financial aid the same way as it was in the community colleges when they went to OUS? Or did they have a positive experience with relocation? Were their dual credits accepted at all the institutions they went to? That's kind of the stuff the HEC will think about, whereas the institutions are thinking about, how do I get this student through with the least amount of debt, fastest amount of time, highest quality degree, and get them in a place where they can get a job? So it's a different focus, but we kind of deal with very similar things. So I understand it's difficult to have a lot of clarity about these things.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Bridget, I've got a question. It's probably clear, but let me just ask. On page, or in section 3, actually, it refers to the HEC advising the OEID on some state goals, and then it says Associated Achievement Compact. So for various things, for the post-secondary education system, including community colleges and universities and so forth, and for OSAC as well. Then what I envision there is a more, let's say, linear relationship between the HEC and the OEIB in terms of interacting on behalf of the institutions within the OUS system and the colleges. Is that kind of correct? A more direct relationship? And either one of you can jump in here on this. And then I'm going to compare and contrast that with something else I see elsewhere.
Mr. Chair, specifically to Section 3 of the bill, what is a little bit confusing in this bill is the investment board still has a sunset on it.
Right.
And so the bill's drafted both with the investment board and then what it would look like after the investment board goes away. Specifically in Section 3 anticipates a post-investment board world. So it's very specific that the HEC would develop state goals and associated achievement compacts. The current status would be with the investment board is the Higher Education Coordinating Commission has a role to advise the investment board on the compacts so that, as the compacts are created, the Higher Education Coordinating Commission can look at the form of the compacts and say, well, this makes sense, this doesn't make sense. You know, this compact is in the OUS one. Maybe community colleges should look at it also. And how does the compacts reflect how students move through the system? But it's not a linear relationship in terms of the Higher Education Coordinating Commission would approve or disapprove the compacts. It's just merely advising the investment board on those compacts.
I appreciate that, and I get that part.
Okay.
The other part, then, if you go to Section 7, we still have language in here about performance compacts with the between the State Board of Higher Ed and the OUS system. That would be in your arena here. So compare and contrast the achievement compacts on the one side with the institutions and the HEC and advising in that process. On the other hand, we have performance compacts, which I assume are something different.
Mr. Chair.
With the OUS system.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So this, I'm going to have to take you back in time a little bit. Okay. If you recall back last session, OUS used to have these 1,000-line budgets, and we talked about this doesn't make a lot of sense. And so but this is when the OEIB was first, Senate Bill 909 was in the legislature, but this, I would actually take you back to the time when we had the interim committee. We're talking about maybe we should come up with a performance compact, something that we say, institutions, you deliver X, and we're just going to be hands-off. We don't need to have prescriptive, tiny budgets. We're going to give you some goals that we want you to achieve. So this is about that, and that until the achievement compacts fully kick in, we still have a relationship with DAS, and it's either thousands of lines of budget or that performance compact that we proposed in Senate Bill 242. And this is one of those things that because 242 and 909 came through at the same time, there needed to be a little bit of clarification between them. So the performance compacts are between OUS and these institutions, and they are primarily how we achieve our budget right now. As the achievement compacts come on fully, then obviously there's going to be a transition. But because of the timing of everything, we needed to have this within the bill.
I appreciate that. My only other last comment on the topic would be, in the event that something unfortunate should happen to that piece of legislation that contains the achievement compact language in it, the fallback would be Section 7 then in terms of the performance compact with OUS. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes. And we're completely fine with moving forward on what really has happened is our performance compact is evolving into the achievement compacts in terms of how we've thought about them and how we've articulated what kind of goals we want to value and we think would be supported by the OEIB. So in general, we've been shifting towards that model of budgeting, and this is that was very much in line with the spirit of where we were going.
Thank you. Any further comments before we go to Mr. Nesbitt?
Mr. Chair, just one. So going back to the governance question, and I think Representative Greenlick raised one of the, you know, the key issues that we're going to have to work on, and that is the question of how do we deal with new programs and make sure that there's not duplication or overlap, or, you know, how do we coordinate that? That's going to be a major responsibility. To some extent, that governance work is being done currently under the Office of Degree Authorization, right? In terms of the relationship between for-profit entities and public entities, but also within public entities, I think the ODA has a function to make sure that there's not overlap or, you know, what's the term, unlawful intrusion? No, it's
ODA.
Not that. No, the Office of Degree Authorization, which is currently under OSAC, and that's the Student Access Commission. And when there are disputes over that, then the disputes are reconciled through the OSAC board. And presumably now those disputes, well, I'm not sure actually, who, and maybe Josette will be coming up and maybe she can explain, or you can, Andrea. But somebody will be reconciling those sorts of disputes. Now that, to my mind, looks like governance, right? That there is some governance that's involved here, although I would agree with Andrea that primarily what we're talking about here is coordination and strategic planning, as it were.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dembrough, the adverse impact situation that you're talking about, I used to chair OSAC back in the day, and I actually had to sit in on one of these before. What would happen as it's currently written is that the HEC, I believe, would be taking over that responsibility. So there would be a subset of the HEC that would entertain if there were an institution that decided to set up shop a few blocks away from another institution and offer the same program. That's kind of what happens. It's very rare in Oregon, but it's happening.
Like a school of public health.
Well, it's the ones I've seen have been primarily very small programs, and there are very subtle nuanced differences. One of them was a independent college offered a program for police training, and PCC wanted to offer the same program, but a broader program, and so we had to get down in the details of determining, was there a sufficient adverse impact going to be imposed on this private institution or not? It's very intricate. So I can just say, yes, it would indeed be House of the HEC, and that they would be the ones who entertain the adverse impact hearings.
Okay. Take it, Mr. Nesbitt, and I guess I would just add one other comment about the HEC, you know, and one of the difficult things for all of us in terms of wrapping our minds around this is that it still only exists on paper and in the fertile recesses of some minds floating around this topic. So if and when there actually is a HEC, it'll be a lot easier to quantify what they do and who they are and all that kind of stuff. So I guess, Tim, as you go back to your conversations with the governor and folks in his office, you know, the little haste on that appointment process would be much appreciated.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, I'm Tim Nesbitt, manager of the Oregon Education Investment Project. I think the case has been well made as to what purpose the HEC will serve. The fact that before there was a HEC, right now, since the HEC is yet to be established, we've had the joint boards. That was a matter of form following function, the two boards realizing that there were these challenges in regard to transfer and articulation, coordination between the community college system and the university system, which has been addressed in, I think, effectively, but still in somewhat of an ad hoc fashion, since the joint boards consist of members of each of the Board of Education and the Higher Ed Board. This will institutionalize that coordination in the form of the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. Will expand its scope, as Representative Dembrough already mentioned, to include workforce investment boards and private colleges. And we expressed early on in the process this session a couple of principles which we hope could be met. And I think they're both addressed in this legislation. One is that we align the processes for the Higher Education Coordinating Commission advising the Oregon Education Investment Board and the legislature as to budget decisions in a timely manner. And I think the changes here managed to reconcile what were previously some round pegs and square holes, and so we got them aligned. Secondly, that the Higher Education Coordinating Commission be able to provide timely advice to the Oregon Education Investment Board on the design of achievement compacts. And this will allow that to happen for the years following the 12-13 year, since under the legislation to be considered separately, that the first year for achievement compacts would be 12-13. But this would then create the alignment thereafter. The only remaining concerns we have, they're not insurmountable, but I just want to make sure that I've been clear to put them on the record, is the lack of resources for the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. As with the joint boards, they have been staffed by borrowed staff from the Chancellor's Office and the Community College and Workforce Development Office. We think, for instance, with the Office of Degree Authorization coming over to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission on July 1, but with no funding for a executive director for the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, that what we can do is through an interagency agreement, make sure that the funds are transferred and the personnel now in place doing this work can continue to be funded. We think it's unlikely there'll be any funding available to actually hire a executive director for the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. We have in the process, as you know, the recruitment of a person to fill the chief education officer position, and we think that position can also serve to provide the oversight needed to fill in the absence of a director of the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, at least in the interim. So those are the ways in which we will, on our end, attempt to make it work, and we think it's workable. But I do want to call attention to the fact that that executive director position is not yet funded.
Any questions for Tim?
I'm glad you brought up that piece about the funding or lack thereof. And I guess at first glance or thought, I guess I'm a little skeptical about the ability of that one individual to perform his or her duties, getting the OEIB up and off the ground, as well as adequate HEC oversight as well. I appreciate where we're at, but that's a heavy lift, especially as we continue to ladle on or add on more and more responsibilities to the HEC as well. It's going to bear some monitoring for sure that we're going to have to keep abreast of. Okay, well, thank you, all of you, for your testimony today. We have another panel to bring up. Cindy Hunt and Josette Green and Jim Markey.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Co-Chair Johnson and Co-Chair Dembrough, my name is Cindy Hunt. I'm the Government Legal Affairs Manager for the Department of Education. So now, switching gears a little bit, I'm going to talk about the private career school piece of the bill in front of you. So private career schools are currently licensed by the Department of Education. And I think, as you've heard, under the bill, these this licensing function would be transferred over to the HEC. The way the bill currently is, on July 1st, 2012, although our understanding, the A-10s, Co-Chair Johnson, that you mentioned, would delay this transfer until July 1st, 2013. And to be clear, the department is very much in favor of a delay of the transfer for many of the reasons that you mentioned previously, because we think it's very important to have a fully formed and functioning HEC before the private career school licensure piece is transferred over to it. So private career schools, just briefly, there's about 240 of these licensed schools in Oregon, and there's about 30,000 students that get certifications in such things as pet grooming, cosmetology, massage, truck driving, all sorts of things. And so basically on a weekly basis, department staff that deals with private career school matters, they receive, you know, new applications for licensure, complaints, investigations are conducted, technical assistance is given. And so, you know, in response to some of the questions earlier about governance, this is very much a governance piece. And so under the bill, also to be clear, the pieces around private career school, how they're licensed, what the standards are, all of that kind of thing, none of that changes. It's just that instead of the State Board of Education adopting, for example, rules and standards, that responsibility would be transferred to the HEC. Along with that, with the staff that's dedicated to private career school matters, currently we have 5 continuing staff that are dedicated and 2 limited duration staff for an FTE of a little under 4. So those folks would be transferred, like I said, on July 1st, hopefully 2013. So with that, I'll turn it over to my partners here. And I would just like to say we're also very committed to working with the former Office of Degree Authorization, who will be housed in the HEC, and whoever is at the HEC in the next year, to make sure that this transition, you know, is smooth and that student protection is still available throughout the transition.
Good afternoon. Representative Johnson, Representative Dembro, and members of the committee. I'm Josette Green. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Student Access Commission. And at the Student Access Commission, we house the Office of Degree Authorization. So I'm pleased to be here today and talk with you. The Office of Degree Authorization is one that in Senate Bill 242 in the last legislative session was authorized to move over to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission this July 1st of 2012, and it is still slated as such. Since we know that the HEC at this point in time only exists in Representative Johnson's head, we do know that there are some questions left, but I want to assure you that Office of Degree Authorization, we've situated it and ready to move it over at the appointed time, knowing that there are yet some decisions to be made. We've tried to keep any decision-making about the Office of Degree Authorization very neutral so that future leadership will have the ability to structure it in the manner that's most appropriate for that structure. The office currently has two full-time FTE. Jennifer Diallo is our current director and is well-equipped to continue to lead the effort with it. The Office of Degree Authorization performs three functions. They do degree approval or program approval, primarily at degree institutions. The second thing is adverse impact, and the third item is identifying diploma mills and working with anyone within the state to identify degrees of individuals and to ensure that they are well credentialed degrees. So that's the function of the office. And again, we're ready and willing to continue to work with the concept of the HEC and move it over. One aspect to be considered as well, and again, we'll work with the appropriate entities and, of course, the Career School section of ODE, knowing that our budget process begins very shortly for the 13-15 biennium. Of course, with ODA moving over in 2012, followed by the Career Schools in 2013, that budget process will need to be a joint one currently, so that we're prepared for the 13-15 biennium. So, anyway, I'm welcome, glad to be here today. ODA and OSAC are not mentioned in this part of the bill, but I'm certainly glad to be here and answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Josette. And let me just add that, you know, what we're trying to do here is to end two kind of anomalies that we have in our system. It's sort of strange that, first of all, that the degree institutions are over here under OSAC, and the career colleges, those that grant certificates, are in ODE. And in fact, we have some schools which have both certificates and degrees, and their certificates are overseen by ODE, and their degrees are overseen by OSAC. And you know, just speaking for myself, I can tolerate a great degree of incongruity and illogic, but this one just was too much. And so we're trying to repair this and really bring them together. I think where it's most logical, but I think also where the the oversight and the coordination can be more effective. So, Jim, maybe you can tell us what this looks like from the ground of a career college.
Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. I'm Jim Marquis. Our firm, Marquis & Associates, represent the Oregon Association of Cosmetology Colleges. And in past years, we've done work for a broader array of career colleges. I've always thought it a little odd that the Department of Education, most of whose duties revolve around K-12, had these career colleges. I can only assume that they lost a coin toss somewhere. So when we began looking at this legislation, there was a certain level of angst among career colleges generally, I think, and among my clients in particular. I spoke with the president of my association and then the board, and I really just said, if you were going to design a system
in which you had an agency involved with governance and regulation of the K-12 education, and another agency overseeing all of post-secondary education. Which of those agencies would you think career colleges might fit under? And really, it's just as simple as that. If you're talking, these career colleges are for-profit entities, but they are involved in post-secondary education, and I've always thought that there should be much more coordination of activities between the rest of the post-secondary education community and these schools, and there's been that has almost been non-existent. So to the extent that this will help that, and we hope it does, this could be a good thing. Our folks now are fine with the transfer over, but I think that it's important to recognize here that the A-10 amendments that have been mentioned several times have not been adopted to this bill yet.
Right.
And I think this delay of 1 year of transferring these duties over is absolutely critical. Cindy referred to this as more of a governance structure. It's really a regulatory program for private businesses operating in this state. And there are, if you look at sections 20 through 40 of this bill, you will see that it is a regulatory program involving oversight of refunds of tuition and complaints from students and fair dealing by businesses, and you can't simply say that's going to transfer over to this new agency that isn't in place yet and leave that regulatory function with no one to oversee it. So you simply need to do that for the good of the state. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, certainly. Mr. Greenlee. Representative Greenlee, pardon me.
Yes, Mr. Whatever, yeah. I really do remain a little bit confused, but it reminds me of the story we used to tell about the new CEO in an organization. The outgoing CEO that had been fired said to him, you know, as a favor, I've left you three envelopes in the bottom left-hand drawer of your desk, and when you get into trouble, open up the envelopes and see what to do. And a year or so went on, he got in a little bit of trouble. He opened up the first envelope and it said, form a committee to study the problem. That'll take the pressure off. So he formed a committee and saw the problem. That took the pressure off for another 2 years. And he got into trouble again. He remembered, the second envelope. And he went to open up the second envelope and it said, reorganize. Because when you reorganize, everybody else will be so confused, they won't know what's going on. It'll give you some time to solve the problem. And that worked, actually, for 3 years. The third year after he'd been in 6 years, he got into real trouble, and he went to his drawer to look for help and opened the third envelope, and it said, prepare three envelopes. In a sense, we've gotten by the committee, and we're now into reorganization. And I suppose the third envelope has to do with when the governor's term runs out or when our terms run out, whichever comes first. But this is seeming a little strange to me as I look at it, and I hope we're going to have some faith that these things about the OEAB being responsible for the HECC, and they all are now responsible for budgets, not the higher ed chancellor. I mean, there are all these things going on that seem to me very interesting. It should be the next 2 years watching this happen. It should be very interesting as we take a leap of faith into the future.
I think faith is the operative word in some degree.
Mr. Chair, can I comment?
And three envelopes.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting here is that, you know, I just want to remind you, we have, looking at this historically, in its short-term history, we have really two parallel processes that were at work. You know, the process that led to the HEC and, you know, ultimately to the whole question of university governance was happening, you know, starting a year and a half ago. I mean, that work began with the work of the Legislative Committee on Higher Education. Rip Springer and I were on. And, you know, that led to Senate Bill 242. That led to the creation of the HEC. The HEC itself was not originally thought of, but when in the early days of that, we had some the national experts from WICHE and from the national whatever on higher education management, you know, telling us that we really were missing something by not having a group that brought together all of higher education together to pursue initiatives around, I mean, you can call it 40-40-20 if you want, but, you know, of course, 40-40-20 is just a metaphor for the notion of extending access and success to more Oregonians.
But the group has no power and no staff. I mean, what does it mean to bring everybody together?
I think, you know, the belief is, and I do subscribe to this belief, that when you have, you know, if you're looking at something like textbooks, having people from all over the state and, you know, from the different universities, from the different colleges, coming together to do common joint initiatives, that's going to do a lot. And this HEC is going to provide the arena for that.
You know, Representative Greenlee, you're correct. I mean, it certainly is a work in progress, and we're not very far down. We haven't pounded a lot of nails in this project yet. We haven't poured any concrete yet, but yes, there's all sorts of pieces and acronyms floating around out there, and we're talking about them, but I think the belief, obviously, is we're going to bring them together and try to consolidate them into one more streamlined, more operational, more focused governance structure, and I think over time it will work. But it's just the means of getting there, and obviously as the budgets permit and you know, the process goes on, I think we'll see that work. So, Representative Hunt, did you have a comment or a question?
I mostly just had a question for the two of you. There was some reference to, obviously, these amendments are not part of the bill yet. Are they controversial at all? Or?
I think they're just late arriving. I think it's just a little, that's my understanding.
I just wanted to see if we needed to be lobbying anyone
on a date that was not quite, you know.
Right. These are truly technical amendments. Yeah. And in fact, I think they were in earlier versions. Now we're in version 10, amendment 10. And as the amendments have come out, I'm not quite sure how this happened, but different elements were dropped off, and now we're just trying to get them back in.
Yeah, Co-Chair Denbrough and Co-Chair Johnson, my understanding, having watched Senate Ed when this bill mm-hmm. came out, they literally had a last-minute set of amendments that came in during the committee meeting, and we believe it was truly an oversight, and in fact, we got authorization from the chair of the Senate Ed Committee, Senator Haas, to get our extension of a year, so we believe they're fully in support of that.
Great, thanks.
Josette, did you have a chance to talk yet?
I
stepped out.
Wasn't.
You're you were fast. Brief.
she was good. And, Mr. Chair, I want to thank both Cindy and Josette for, you know, our coming together and resolving this problem. Anytime you're transferring authority from one agency to another, you know, it can be a ticklish affair. But I think this is being done in a way that's really for the good of the schools and the good of the students that are affected by them.
Thank you, panel. And committee, I guess if there's no further comments or questions, I think we can be done for the day. So this obviously is a topic as we move from here, move into the interim. There'll be a lot of work going on surrounding the entire higher ed discussion. It's going to be a very busy interim.
Okay. That's a question.
Sir?
Who is going to be responsible for the budget? According to this sheet, it says that the HEC will be operating under the direction and control of OWEB, and they're going to develop the consolidated budget rather than the chancellor. I mean, who's really in charge here?
The budget's for the institutions or the budget for OUS?
For OUS. Well, I assume that means OUS and the institutions at this moment. Well, it's a consolidated budget, is it?
I would say.
Well, the budget or the state allocation. You know, I mean, the OUS is responsible for the university budgets now, and the individual community colleges are responsible for their budgets.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the state allocation, you know, the OEIB will be getting recommendations from the State Board of Education, from OUS, with some advice from us, and then we'll make recommendations to the governor, who will submit a budget to us.
It says it clarifies that the OUS chancellor is not responsible for preparing and submitting a funding request for OUS to the board. And it says above that the PAC, working under the direction and control of OEB, and including the preparation of a higher education budget request and reauthorization. So is that really where we're going with this? It is, I mean. Mm-hmm. Although they have no staff and no and no budget.
Right. Well, as Tim said, this won't happen until the next cycle, I think. Is that right?
This is what the one pager says.
Right, yeah. And just in full disclosure, this one pager came from the Senate, so.
Oh, okay.
Right.
That explains it.
Yeah, it has written all over it.
Mr. Co-Chairs, again, Tim Nesbitt for the Governor's Office. I'm not sure what you're looking at. What we understood is that in the preparation of the Governor's recommended budget for 13-15, the OEIB will be involved in that. And we were hoping that, and I think this is the case in this legislation before you, that the Higher Education Coordinating Commission will be able to provide advice to the OEIB. In addition to agency budget submissions and what is now being done by OUS through the summer months, there'll be a point in September, October, where all this is brought together in the governor's recommended budget process. And the Oregon Education Investment Board will weigh in the later stages and provide advice to the governor, who chairs that board, before the governor's recommended budget is finalized. In addition, so this this is a method and a timeline for which the Higher Education Coordinating Commission can provide timely advice for the governor's recommended budget. In addition, I believe there's a separate path here where the Higher Education Coordinating Commission can provide advice to you, the legislature, as the budget's developed in your process, as you act on the governor's recommended budget. So they have two avenues for providing advice to the final shape of the budget: governor's recommended budget and legislatively adopted budget.
Well, I will say that just based on this handout, I think Representative Greenlich is correct, and I would have to take a closer look to see. I mean, what the handout says is that essentially that OUS and the colleges and OSAC give their requests to the HEC, which then forwards it to the OEIB.
HEC operating under the direction of OEIB.
Right. So in a sense, the HEC is, for this purpose, a subcommittee of the OEIB. And is that what we're looking at? So the OUS budget.
Mr. Dembro, in effect, yes.
Okay. So the OUS budget will not go directly to the OEIB, and the community college budget will no longer go through the State Board of Education.
On that point, I think that's not the case, Mr. Co-Chair. I think the State Board of Education, the board, will be part of the construct of the budget requests. Those will come with come through the Higher Education Coordinating Commission for its, I wouldn't say its stamp of approval, but its advice. And then that advice provided by the Higher Education Coordinating Commission applied to the budget request from the Board of Education and the Higher Ed Board always then gets formulated in the governor's recommended budget. It still will. But before that happens, the Oregon Education Investment Board will be able to take into account the advice of the Higher Education Coordinating Commission and advise the governor on what he brings forward to you as the governor's recommended budget.
Mr. Chair, this is very specifically that no U.S. chancellor is not responsible for preparing and submitting a budget under this statute, that it becomes the Higher Education Coordinating Council under the direction and control of OWIP.
Called Bridge It Up.
Right. Well, I think that request was the request that
Heck is the communicating
arm with the OUIB rather than the Chancellor's office communicating directly with them.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, I can clarify for you. What you're indicating, I didn't see this piece of paper, but I know what it's about. It's that there was a kind of an accidental deletion when we were expanding. We were clarifying where should the achievement compacts be at the end of the day, and it made more sense, as I mentioned earlier, that the HEC not really own those, that those are the OEIB because it's about the budget. So we had to delete a number of provisions in Senate Bill 242 and in the bill in general that were giving the HEC some responsibility for the achievement compacts. And one of the over-deletions, because they followed a relating clause, was to make it so that the State Board of Higher Ed and OUS cannot formulate a budget. That was obviously not intended, and that's also a critical piece for the compact that's going to come from the OUS system to the OEIB, in addition to the compacts that are going to come from the campuses to the OEIB. So this was unintentional, and that's what the Dash 10 amendments fix. So this is something that will hopefully not be. This was an accident in addition to getting rid of, and in addition to the piece about the transfer of the career schools being instantly. Mm-hmm. Obviously, these were just minor oversights, you know, unintentional. And so the Dash 10s clean that up.
And if I may, I think what I described to you is my understanding as reflected in the Dash 10s.
So just one more time. So the, you know, as you see the budget process working, you know, the OUS in conjunction with the individual universities will prepare an initial budget request, and then what happens?
So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, how I see this happening is that what we do right now is we look at our campuses, we look at their enrollment possibilities, how much room they have, what their tuition rate that they are planning on asking to requests of students, and making sure it's all under the budget note, whatever budget note we're abiding under. We formulate a general budget, and then we submit it to, at this point, to DAS and to you. But
we being OUS.
Mm-hmm. We being OUS, on behalf of all seven universities. However, with the OEIB, we've already articulated a draft achievement compact. It's not fully there yet, where we articulate the number of degrees that we're planning on delivering in exchange for the amount of money that we're provided every year, the amount of jobs, hopefully, that we're filling in workforce areas, and a variety of other important things. So our achievement compact we're trying to do right now, that would go to the OEIB. But on its way to the OEIB, it stops over at the HEC, and they can look at it. But they're not going to be having any decision-making authority about it. The HEC is just going to kind of keep an eye out. And that's because ultimately, the HEC for you is somewhat of a committee of the legislature. It's supposed to be something that when you ever you have questions about higher ed, whatever they are, that you could be able to have an entity where a staff would know the people they need to talk to, know the information they need to know about how things work in each sector within each public and private, and be able to assemble that information for you. Right now, what happens is somebody calls either my office or CCWD, or they call an independent college, or they call HSU, and sometimes those conversations aren't fully informed about everything that's going on everywhere. And the role of the HEC is to kind of have an eye of what's going on and be able to provide you with a more holistic perspective. So in terms of the budget process, how I view it, and again, it's all, I'm looking into my crystal ball, I think that the HEC will probably look at the budgets and mainly be thinking about transfer and articulation and thinking about financial aid policy, like the opportunity grant, things that aren't specific to any of the sectors but kind of transcend them. And they're going to be the ones who are thinking on behalf of the students, in addition to, obviously we are, but they're going to be thinking primarily about the student's experience, regardless of where they're sitting in what classroom or who they're paying tuition to. And so hopefully it will make things easier, but they would be able to weigh in on things like maybe transfer and articulation, dual credit. They might want to address issues pertaining to the Aspire program. They might want to suggest some new programs that are kind of like ETIC for different degree areas. I mean, who knows? Anything could be up in the air.
Well, Bridget, appreciate you filling in some of the gaps, of which there remain a few. But we're moving along, and I hope you'll take the comments back to the governor's office about the reality of the HEC being needful as soon as possible. We can go ahead. You have something else, Dan?
Mr. Chair, one thing I didn't get a chance to say today that I said yesterday that might be helpful is just give you an idea of what this will be like for me in my current job, how I see the HEC. If we had a HEC today, let's say I get a call from Western Oregon University, and they want to expand into this one degree area. And they're just kind of interested in expanding the pipeline. So I would call the HEC, and I would say, here's what we're interested in doing. Who do you know that's interested in doing the same? And hopefully the person on the other end of the line would know, well, George Fox is thinking about doing that. So is Umpqua Community College. You might want to call Clatsop Community College, too. Here are the people you should be talking to. Here's what their experience has been like. And, in fact, you should also think about what's happened in Indiana and Arkansas. They did something similar, and here's the best practices they learned. So, for me, when I think about the HEC, it should be there to make my job easier. Mm-hmm. It should be something that informs both the Legislative Assembly and those who are working on behalf of students, regardless of where we sit, if we work at an independent college or OHSU or a community college. It would just be a resource. It would not be telling us what to do. It would be enabling us to do more with the limited resources that we have right now. And I think one of the reasons why it's important is that in a state with such constrained resources, collaboration really is critical. We can't not collaborate. But collaboration really is something that you kind of have to be intentional about. And this would be something that would provide some infrastructure around something that we already know works. The Joint Boards is very successful. And now we would actually probably have at least one person who works there that could be able to be a consistent source of support for all of the different educational sectors. So, in my mind, that's what my experience, I would hope, would be with the HEC. But I hope that's helpful in terms of shedding light on the potential new good. World.
Very good. That helps to clarify it for a lot of us.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, I can add that this bill had its hearing yesterday in the Ways and Means Education Subcommittee. And we're not sure yet just exactly where it's going next. But something will happen to it.
I think it referred out to capital construction or I don't know.
I don't think it's been worked.
I can't say for sure now.
Okay.
Not going to.
We'll leave that up to our other friends at the subcommittee level.
Yes.
Okay, with that then we'll be finished with our informational hearing.
Get to the boss.
And